commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
And welcome to Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 8.
Selling our organs to science and time traveling back in time to stop ourselves by creating a time paradox. Or something like that.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And you'll notice that Adam is not back. That would be because some sort of alien entity has consumed his soul and left him lifeless in his basement.
Or otherwise known as his wife.
Yes, yeah, something of that nature, yeah. So he's just not going to be here this episode. And next week we're not going to have an episode because there are just time constraints that are making it impossible. Namely, a 5-hour time difference for me.
Mm-hmm. Being, that's a pretty big one.
Yeah, I'll be in another country. So, and it'll be, yeah, and I don't even think they have internet in this country, so to be honest.
So Britain doesn't have the internet.
I've been to Britain. Most of it doesn't have the internet.
I think your British fans might be a little bit pissed off.
They don't even have plumbing there. I'm just kidding. Actually, when I was there, one of the first times I ever went there, I had an obsession with medieval plumbing.
Medieval plumbing is slightly awesome.
Yeah, every castle we went to, we would have to find the toilet.
Yeah, the pipes, you know.
I took pictures of every medieval toilet we found. So I have pictures of holes in a wall.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder about you.
They're just fascinating. Like, mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on. So this episode's going to be hopefully a little bit shorter than previous episodes. There's no intro discussion. We just have news, and then we have a main segment, and then our ending segment. So we're just going to dive right into the news, and hopefully this will go fast, unless Jen talks for 6 hours, in which case I'll just mute her.
I'm good at, though. Don't mute me.
I have the power.
I know you do.
No worries. I wish I could say that like He-Man, you know.
I have
the power! That was really sad.
Yeah, it was really bad. Not very convincing at all.
I had fun saying it anyway.
Alrighty, so why don't you start us off, because I think the first bit of news is maybe the news you're most interested in.
We'll pretend that it is, and I will introduce it anyway. So, the producer behind Alien vs. Robot, Predator, iRobot, has optioned the film rights to Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles, which is exciting because
yay.
I think we all love Ray Bradbury. You can't really be a science fiction fan and not like Ray Bradbury, in my opinion. It's like, you know, a requirement.
All right.
There has been, it is, totally is. It was my first introduction to science fiction, so I think it's a lot of people's first introductions.
Yeah, for a lot of people, you know, it is, yeah.
Who else would you get? How else would you get introduced to science fiction?
There are plenty of other authors.
Well, I know, but that's kind of kid-friendly.
Kid-friendly? Oh, well, I mean, I didn't get into sci-fi through kid-friendly stuff.
Well,
so.
Ray Bradbury's kid-friendly.
I didn't read Ray Bradbury when I was a kid, so...
Well, that's because you're just behind.
No, I just...
You're a late bloomer. It's okay.
I just was reading Paul Anderson, so...
Oh, okay. Fine. I guess I was the late bloomer. Anyway.
Yeah.
This has already been made into a television miniseries in 1980 that starred Rock Hudson and Bernadette Peters, which I think is hilarious. I did not see it. But they are planning on making it into a film. It hasn't been cast. It has not. They don't have a director. They don't even have a script. I think that would be the one thing that would worry me the most. It being a collection of short stories, I would worry they would try to make it into one cohesive film as opposed to a collection of short stories. And I parts of it would lend themselves well to being mashed together, but I don't know if I would want them to be.
Yeah, well, I'm iffy on it just because even though this guy did iRobot, which I thought was an alright film, he also did Alien vs. Predator, and that is by far, like, that's just a horrible movie. So,
and yet, I still liked it.
I can't even watch it. They totally destroyed the Predators for me.
They destroyed the Predators for you? Really?
Yeah.
Not the aliens.
No. See, because the aliens were still, like, kind of the aliens that we knew, you know? But the Predators, they made 10 times bulkier. They made them just massive, massive compared to original. And I'm just like, these are not hunters. These are not the kinds of characters that you saw in the original Predator movie, which is, you know, they're kind of sneaky. They're really clever. Now they're just these bulky, giant, like, they just, like, took Arnold Schwarzenegger and the original Predator and they mated them together to give us these things. That's what this is like. And it just was kind of lame. They're just too
big. I could see that argument against it. I had never thought of it that way because I hadn't seen the Predator films in years before that. So
I just think that they don't have the kind of weapon, the firepower to mandate being that big. If you're going to be that big, then you need to have bigger guns. And they don't. They don't have big enough guns for that. They need to be a little bit more stealthy.
Stealthy, slimmed down, wiry.
Yeah, I mean, not still muscular. Like, if you watch the originals, they're still very muscular.
No, I know. They are, but they're... A little more agile.
Yeah.
Yeah, to an extent.
So that's why I don't like the Alien vs. Predator movie.
Well, then what do you think of the ones that are in the new Predator film? This is obviously totally off topic. But
I haven't seen enough about it yet. I think they're fairly
similar to the ones in Alien vs. Predator.
Then
so.
I'm going to hate it.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
If they evolve to get bigger.
Well, then they need to come with nukes instead of the little
pants. Maybe there are different predators for different prey. Maybe the predators that prey on humans are smaller and more wiry, and the ones that prey on aliens are bigger.
But that doesn't make any sense, because aliens are incredibly agile and quick. Why wouldn't they be quick and agile to combat that?
They're also super strong, though, so...
Yeah, but aliens have egg sacs with things that, like, pump your face, so...
Well, yeah, but, I mean, even though they were big, they were still agile. I mean, the predators...
They weren't really. No. Watch the movie again. They're, like, lumber. They run like the really big buff guys try to run, you know?
Oh, yeah, they did.
You know, they're like, dung, dung, dung. If they were made of fat, everything would jiggle around, but they're made of... pure muscle, so everything just kind of stays still like a plastic doll.
That's because most of their costume is made of plastic.
That's not the point. Don't. Shut up. Anyway, so I'm apprehensive, but...
Okay, right. I mean, I can see that. I did like iRobot to an extent.
It was a decent movie. It wasn't like a great movie. It could have been better, but I like Will Smith.
Obviously, most things can. So.
I'd watch anything with Will Smith in it, so...
Probably. Even that crappy superhero film.
Hancock?
Ugh.
I still watched that, and, like, for some reason I still liked it, even though I knew it was a bad movie.
I know.
Will Smith. It's just Will Smith. I just want to hug him.
Everybody wants to hug him.
Except he's a Scientologist, so...
Oh, he is?
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that another time. I've got stories to tell you. Anyway, so... Let's not talk about that too much. You didn't actually start with the thing I thought you were going to start with, which was the Spider-Man deal.
Oh, that's right. That part. I apologize. Yes, so I'm a comic book nerd to an extent. We used to collect every Spider-Man title that existed, but Sam Raimi may have dropped out of the fourth Spider-Man film, but Marvel certainly didn't. And they are still going ahead with it, and they have finally cast the new Spider-Man, and it is the kid from Dr. Parnassus. The Imaginarium Dr. Parnassus, the Andrew Garfield. And I'm excited. I didn't realize who he was at first when I just saw the picture and the name, but he is so spot on for casting Peter Parker. He is such a dweeb. And he's a tiny... skinny little dweeb, and I think they're going with, I don't remember exactly what the premise is of the fourth film, but I believe it's a early look at Spider-Man, as in high school, early high school Spider-Man, whereas in the first three Spider-Man films, you know, it starts with him getting bitten, but he's like a senior, I believe, in high school.
Right, and they jump forward into
college. Exactly. But I believe in the new film, it'll be as if he was bitten earlier in high school, something along those lines. More like the cartoon, the Spider-Man cartoons.
Right.
The newer ones. Which I think is pretty cool because I've always liked the Spider-Man as a young kid version. I've always just enjoyed that, probably because, you know, when I was in high school, I was a dweeb. So was everybody I hung out with. And I was less enamored with, you know, him, you know, past college, you know, it was the drama of life.
Emo jazz. Yeah,
exactly. Right. The third film. Oh, was not a big fan of that. So I think it is exciting. Plus, Andrew Garfield has proven his chops in Parnassus.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he was in Doctor Who, which I think is pretty cool.
Yes, he was in two episodes of Doctor Who.
So he's got some science fiction background there.
Yeah.
Not necessarily comic book hero background, but he was fantastic in Parnassus, so hopefully he'll be able to translate it.
The most amazing movie.
Right. It really was an amazing movie, and I can't even explain why. I just loved it.
Just see it. If you've not seen the movie, go buy it for $19.99 at Walmart.
Definitely.
And if you don't want to keep it, give it to me. I will take the copy.
Oh, totally. I actually encourage my sisters to not watch it.
Why?
I don't think she's smart enough. It's one of those films that really takes them thought. Not just thought. You have to pay attention to it. And she's a movie viewer that tends to get distracted easily. Plus, if she were ever watching it with me, I might have to murder her within the first 10 minutes of the film because she would ask me 50 questions.
How does she watch a Michael Bay film then? Because there's so much going on visually. Like, how does she not get confused?
She gets confused. I adore my sister. It's her 30th birthday today. I love her, but I hate watching movies with her. She gets completely lost. She'll not hear something and she'll have to ask you. She'll ask for references, like, what is he talking about? And you're like, dude, I'm watching the same freaking movie you are. I'm at the same point in time in the movie. I have never watched this movie before. Why do you think I know the answer to this question? So you cannot watch any thinking movies with her at all.
All right. So
it's just a bad idea. So I said, do not watch The Imaginarium, Dr. Parnassus. I told her to watch something else. I don't remember what, but yeah, I was like, go for that one.
And I take it then she should not watch the movie that he is going to be in that looks amazing called Never Let Me Go, which is based on a book by Kazuo Ishiguro. I probably said the name wrong. Based on the book by Japanese author Ishiguro. Hard to describe what the plot is. It involves organ harvesting.
Right. It's children. Clone children who
are harvested for organs. They live in like a school, and it's really complicated. I'll link to the trailer because we're gonna just massacre the plot, the basic idea,
the premise. It sounds beautiful. The trailer is beautiful.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
And the story just sounds absolutely heartbreaking. And I haven't had a heartbreaking science fiction film since AI that made me want to kill myself. And so I'm really looking forward to this. I think this movie might make me want to kill myself at the end of it. I think it's going to be that tragic.
And you're looking forward to that.
Yes, totally. AI completely made me do it. And not because it was a bad movie, but it was just the most heartbreaking thing I'd ever seen in my entire life. It was so depressing. The last 10 minutes of the film. I mean, you just are like, really? Kill me.
This is the caption of your life. Jen, looking forward to killing myself.
I like movies that evoke that powerful of an emotion.
I agree, but I don't want to feel like I want to kill myself.
Have you seen AI?
I have. I've seen Moulin Rouge, and Moulin Rouge made me cry like a freaking baby, so...
Moulin Rouge is dumb.
No, Moulin Rouge is an amazing movie. How dare you say
Only
that?
Because of the music and Ewan McGregor, but that's it. Beyond that,
The movie's depressing as hell.
It's not.
It's amazing.
It wasn't that depressing. It wasn't depressing on the level that AI was. Nothing is. Mm. I have never seen a movie that it was more depressing than AI. And I think this one might match that.
I don't think that AI was that depressing.
It was that depressing.
I just didn't see it, but maybe because I have more of an emotional connection to the relationship in Moulin Rouge than I did to the robot child in AI.
Possibly. I had children when I saw AI. So that might have been why I was so utterly heartbroken by the entire concept.
And I don't like young children, so.
No, I know. My children are afraid of you.
Yeah, but well, that's because I put them in the dryer. Sound like a terrible person.
We're kidding. Totally yes, kidding.
I totally did not do that. I've watched her kids before. I'm a good person, so.
Yes, they're not afraid of him.
Yeah. So. Much. Andrew Garfield will be in the new Spider-Man. Hopefully it'll be good. It'll probably suck because it's Hollywood.
It probably will. It's Marvel. Marvel has a tendency to ruin things.
Well, they are merged with Disney now, and Disney's been on like a roll.
Disney has been on a roll, but Marvel needs good directors and good scriptwriters to keep them in check. And they have a hard time finding those people. Part of the reason that Sam Raimi left, I believe, was because he had a dispute with them over the fourth film. And yeah, that's the only reason I'm a little bit worried about the new Spider-Man film. But I'm not worried about how Andrew Garfield will perform as Peter Parker.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's given a really horrible script, obviously he's not going to be doing well. But if he's even given a slightly decent script, he will be absolutely fantastic as Peter Parker.
I agree. So,
I practically guarantee it. So,
moving on to happy casting moments then. There was a rumor going around the last like week that Johnny Depp was to star in a big screen adaptation of Doctor Who.
Which I was really excited about, too.
I was pretty excited because I thought, Johnny Depp could pull that off if he don't let him go too crazy.
Definitely could.
So, and the rumor was that Russell T. Davies would be in charge of this. He recently left the Doctor Who franchise to work for BBC America. So they thought maybe that was the secret project he'd been working on. But then apparently Jen just destroyed all of my dreams earlier, like an hour ago.
Sorry. The Googles, they hate you.
And told me that this is actually not true. But then I got a little hope when I realized that, well, Davies has regularly, intentionally lied to the media before about stuff. I mean, maybe nobody knows the actual truth. Maybe there is actually a Doctor Who movie in the making, and maybe they were just testing the waters and, like, leaked a rumor to see what people thought. I don't know. But the idea is really cool. Like, to have a movie version in America of Doctor Who would be amazing.
I think it would be. Obviously, Johnny Depp is good at weird.
Yeah.
My one worry would be I actually like a more serious Doctor Who. I don't like him to be completely off the wall.
Well, that's why you'd have to rein in Depp. Like, you'd have to pull him back just enough so he's not, like, creepy weird, like in Chocolate Factory, where he looks like a pedophile.
Yeah.
Or in Alice in Wonderland, which was... I can't even watch that movie. That movie's so horrible.
It was bad.
Yeah.
I was disappointed. Very, very disappointed. I just watched it, like, 2 weeks ago, and, yeah. I'm sad. I was very sad. But anyway,
yeah.
No, I'm actually more excited about other things that Russell T. Davies is doing. So I'm not too disappointed that there isn't going to be a Doctor Who movie. But then again, I'm not a Doctor Who fan. I shouldn't even say I'm not a fan. I'm a fan of the concept of Doctor Who. I'm a fan of its existence. I just don't watch the show.
Yeah, and there's something wrong with you.
I
watch the
is.
Show, and the show's amazing.
I started watching Torchwood when it first came out, and I'm madly in love with Torchwood. So I'm more excited that Davies is continuing to do Torchwood. I don't know how he's working it, though, because he's doing it in the United States. So whatever.
It'll have a higher budget, though, or a bigger budget.
It will. And the way that it ended in the miniseries, which was freaking brilliant, by the way, did not bode well for the future in Cardiff of Torchwood, but so it will make sense rebooting it in the United States if that's what they choose to do, kind of. But I don't think Americans, and I don't think my problem with BBC America period is it's they're taking great British shows and putting American actors in them. which is actually good to an extent. This doesn't make any sense. Anyway, my worry is that they'll Americanize the show.
The problem is I think that they'd have to Americanize it to a certain extent to relate it to the audience here.
Right. And
even though there are a lot of people that watch Doctor Who here in America, that audience is very small compared to the people who actually watch television in general. So
right,
you'd have exactly. to make it more relevant to us because it's a very British show. A lot of the references in the show are extremely British. I get it because I dated a British person and yada yada. So, I mean, I get a lot of the references and I've been there. So, you know, a couple times.
Yeah, you're an expert.
I'm not an expert, but I get a lot of the references.
No, I hear you. And Torchwood was the same way. The thing with actually most of the I thought BBC America was the one already carrying Torchwood. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. Anyway, Torchwood is the same way. And it really pushes American comfort levels in terms of even what's on television. The fact that there are gay men that kiss and that there's sex, that's shocking to Americans because we're prudes.
Not me.
Not me either.
My sister made me watch Queer as Folk.
That's a pretty good show. Movie.
And that has gay sex in it, so.
Right. I know. I'm the same way. I don't care. I think it's awesome.
Ooh, this show is going in really strange territory now.
Yeah. Moving back. Yeah. So, Torchwood pushed boundaries, so I'm excited that Davies is working on more Torchwood. I was ecstatic when I heard that it was going to be coming back. Because I was absolutely heartbroken when they ended the series. I was excited when they did the miniseries. And then it was like, oh no, it's still over. And I'm never going to see Torchwood again. And I'm going to cry.
Captain Jack Harkness. Yay.
I know. He's wonderful. I love.
He's in Doctor Who a lot, by the way.
I know. And I need to... In the new season?
He hasn't been in the newest
season. Oh, no, he was in the Eccleston version or whatever,
he was
right?
in Eccleston, and he was in the yeah. Tenet version several times.
Right, and then they transferred over to Torchwood. So, I think that...
Well, he reappears while Torchwood is running.
Right, I know.
So, and he has, like, there's, like, a 2 or 3 episode arc in one season, and then he'll appear in another season for a few episodes and so on. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm as long as Harkness comes back, particularly... to the new show. That's more exciting to me than even the prospect of a Doctor Who movie. Although, I think Doctor Who could use a film in the United States to bring it to even broader audiences.
Agreed.
That
All
would
right.
be nice.
But of course, it's just a rumor. But then again, everybody's liars in Hollywood, so whatever.
Who knows? We might find out tomorrow that he is slated to do it. Johnny Depp, that is. And that they are doing a Doctor Who movie. But Johnny Depp is really, really, really busy for the next couple of years. So
it's not too busy for Doctor Who.
I'm more doubtful that Johnny Depp will be in it than I am about the possibility of them making a Doctor Who film.
All they gotta do really is they just have to get Depp another robotic clone, because that's how he does all the stuff he does. He just got robotic clones for him.
Right.
No joke. I've seen them. I got pictures. I got evidence.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't believe me, do you?
I'm barely listening to you. At some point, you just started going, wah, 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 wah.
Oh, great. Wah. I'm a Charlie Brown.
No, his
wah,
teacher.
Wah, 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 wah. Anyway.
Where were we?
We're going to move on to the science bits now and plow through some science. So,
yay!
I don't know how to describe this except to say that it terrifies me, the ocean, even more.
Why you're scared of the ocean has always...
Sharks. Shark and oil leaks.
But the oil terrifies me, but not of the ocean.
It attracts sharks.
It does.
I'm just saying that now until... that's my hypothesis and my theory. Until
that's
such
the
time...
dumbest theory I've ever heard.
Anyway. I just get, like, some sort of terrible skin disease.
Luckily, this thing has been deceased for billions of years.
It's not actually extinct. I know it's not. It's really... It still exists.
Well, it could still exist because it's, you know, offspring still exists.
Yeah. Well, it still exists.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
Why don't we tell them what it is? Why don't you tell them since you're so scared of it?
Okay. So in the Peruvian desert, which I'm assuming is Peru...
No, it's in Guatemala.
Oh, darn. It was so close. They unearthed that some archaeologist thing peoples or whatever they call those people that dig up fossils, paleontologists, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah,
archaeologists. No, paleontologists.
Paleontologists do the bones. Archaeologists
do items. No.
But they do. Anthropologists they do bones. Yeah.
Archaeologists do items.
They do stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah, let's reduce it to something a lot more interesting. Anyway, so paleontologists, fossil-y people-y thing, peoples, unearth this crazy, psychotic, toothed, like, giant-toothed whale monster. Like, no joke. It's a sperm whale, but imagine, like, just imagine a sperm whale. They already got teeth, right? Now, make those teeth, like, 10 times bigger and, like, put, like, laser beams in its eyes. That is what they just unearthed.
All right. For one thing, there are no laser beams. Honestly be the most terrifying thing if it did have laser beams, but it didn't. For another thing, it's actually smaller than modern day sperm whales.
But not by much. Not by much.
By enough.
But like 5 feet.
Yeah.
But it has teeth. They could, like, bite off a sperm whale's head in one bite.
No, it really couldn't.
It could. It totally could. And then if not, it would just fry it with the laser beams.
I love the picture, though, by the way, on the articles. Because it shows this absolutely terrifying beast. And it shows it eating a smaller whale. Of course, the smaller whale looks like a blue whale, which are freaking gigantic.
I know, they're enormous.
So, yeah, it's really one of the worst pictures I've ever seen.
But it illustrates the point perfectly. It's just missing the laser beam eyes, and we're good.
Yes. And they did decide to nickname it the Leviathan, so...
Yeah, and
obviously,
is that the scientific name? Is the Leviathan Melvilli?
Yes, Leviathan Melvilli, because it's apparently the scary version of a sperm whale, because, yes, Melville.
Yeah, Herman Melville Moby Dick, yeah. Which I thought was nice that they kind of had this homage back to him, so.
I think other whales are called Melvilli.
No, they're not.
I believe so.
Oh, well, that totally ruins it then. It's not even sentimental now.
You're just a dork.
Anyway, so sheer numbers, okay? Its teeth are 14 inches long. That's 36 centimeters for you guys that are you just don't use American numbers like the normal people. So 14 friggin' inches. That's over a foot.
Yes.
Imagine that. Take your foot and imagine that going inside your stomach.
It wouldn't even have to use its teeth on us. Its head's, like, its mouth is bigger than us. It would just swallow us.
I know, it's crazy.
No teeth necessary.
And the laser beams. It can shoot you from the water.
Why don't
you
give it rockets in its fins, too?
That's even worse. What if it had rockets? It'd be a flying laser beam shooting friggin' sperm whale.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ridiculous.
Anyway,
the modern version of this Leviathan is a generic sperm whale. They are slightly larger by 15 feet or so. They also don't have that many teeth. They have, you know, evolved to not need them for whatever reason. And I believe they still eat meat. They suck squids in.
They have teeth.
Giant squids. They have teeth primarily on the lower jaw. They barely have any on the upper jaw. And they don't even require the teeth. Some of them don't have them at all.
So they just swallow squid whole?
They just swallow them whole, yeah. They're freaking gnarly.
But the squids have, like, the little beak thing, and they, like, bite their insides out.
They apparently don't mind.
They don't mind being eaten whole? And melting inside of its belly of acid?
No, I'm saying the sperm whales don't mind getting whacked at with a little beak thing.
Oh, well, maybe the inside's, like, uber acid and they just like melt in a second.
Maybe they have like armor on the inside, you know, like they got rid of the laser eyes, but
I'm just got a picture of like a giant squid dressed up as the Wicked Witch of the West and going, yeah, what a world.
You're ridiculous. Seriously.
I've lost my mind.
Yeah, so now, though, they only use their teeth. They think the only reason that they even have teeth is to fight other male sperm whales. The males fight other males. And so it's like they had these gnarly, gnarly teeth to maybe kill other whales, and now they just use them to fight and probably prove their dominance, which seems kind of, like, ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to have giant teeth, just keep them.
They probably had a reason they didn't need them.
I know, which I think is the interesting part, is why would you not need giant teeth?
Well, I mean, there aren't many natural predators for a sperm whale.
That's true.
I mean, there really isn't too much of a reason for it to have the kind of teeth to defend itself.
Except if they wouldn't need it to defend yourself, they needed to eat other giant whales.
Why would they? Well, I mean, maybe they just found that that's just too much work to chew. It's easier to swallow small stuff whole.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much what most whales have gone to anyway, is swallowing things whole.
They figured it out where the sharks didn't.
Yeah, sharks are kind of dumb.
They are dumb. They get caught really in nets dumb all the time.
Which is why it's stupid that you're scared of them. You must be as dumb as a shark.
No, because sharks aren't smart enough to tell the difference between me and a seal. And so,
did you know that dolphins are just gay sharks?
But I can live with that.
That's my favorite quote from Glee ever.
I could live with a gay dolphin.
Anyway, yeah, where were we? Talking about giant sea monsters?
Giant sea monsters with laser beams in their eyes, yeah.
How many sea monsters have they found over the years? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, they found, like, a new species of, like, squid a few, I don't know, like, 3 or 4 months ago, and they found something else that was, like, didn't they find a new shark species that was, like, enormigantuan?
Oh, yeah.
Some sort of mutant super shark?
Some of those are still alive.
Well, no, because the great white's not as big as the things from the dinosaur age.
They've found some pretty gnarly giant sharks. Not as big as the, you know, giant ones, but...
Yeah, but, like, the big ones, they got, like, the whale shark. That isn't really
dangerous. Yeah, well, that's true.
Because he's got, like, gummy mouth, you know? It's not quite the same. It's not as scary as, like, the megalodon, which is, like, a giant great white shark, which is, like, 4 times the size of a great white, and I just say that's where Texas came from, is the prehistoric times.
By the way, I totally lied. Other whales are not Melvilli. It is just this one.
Booyah! Oh yeah, go for sentimentalism.
This is what's interesting, though. A bunch of sea snails are named after Melville as well.
That seems
there's Melvilli, and then there's Melvilli, and one is the whale, and the other one is snails.
That almost seems offensive. Like, some scientist, like, I hate Herman Melville. He made whales so interesting, and I'm a snail man. I'm going to name you after a snail.
Wouldn't that be counterintuitive, you know?
Well, he wasn't a very smart...
I'm giving props to Melville, because he made marine biology cool.
Yeah, but this is a guy that who studies snails.
So he's going to name snails after...
He's not going to get that... He's not going to get that it's not smart to say you don't like somebody and then name your species you like better than his after the guy.
We ramble way too much.
Yeah, but this is an insane show. I don't know what the hell we're talking about. We've lost our minds. Anyway, so crazy psycho toothy whale monster with laser beams. So, yeah. You just let that fester in your head for a bit. We're going to, I think, come back, hopefully, and we're going to talk about libraries, because libraries are less terrifying, and they're very awesome. So we will be back in just a sec. And we're back, and we're going to talk a little bit about libraries today, and it hinges off of Neil Gaiman recently winning both Britain's Carnegie Medal and the U.S. Newbery Medal, which he's the first person in history to get both for the same book, which is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, and very exciting. I love the book, so.
Oh, for the Graveyard Book, right?
Yes.
For the Graveyard Book. I've read the short story that it's based on.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic.
It's a pretty good story. I think some of his other stories from the collection are better, but yeah, whatever.
Probably.
But I can see why people like it. So Gaiman gave a speech, I think, at the Newbery Medal Award when he was receiving that. And he really gave a lot of support to the libraries. Now, to be fair, I mean, he's talking to a bunch of librarians, but he's also a big proponent of libraries, sort of, except he took like $45,000 or something.
Yeah, I was just about to say, didn't you just complain about him taking money from a library?
I didn't complain so much he was taking money from the library as that...
Criticize the library for spending that much on bringing him?
I didn't criticize the library so much. It was more to do with that they have like an 8-author series, and they spent more money on him than they were going to spend for anybody else, like 10 times more for him, which I get, he's a major author, but...
Was this a public library?
It was a public library, and I just felt like...
I'm shocked that they could even afford that.
Yeah, well, they had a pretty large budget of money that was just going to go to waste, so they needed to spend it. Yeah. I just felt like, why couldn't they have got more mid-list authors to sort of expand the program so they had more authors coming in and giving you so much more diversity? That's just kind of my thing. But to be fair, I mean, Gaiman did take the $45K that he got, and he pretty much donated almost all of it to charity.
Oh, well, then...
So, which I thought was really nice. Yeah.
He certainly doesn't need the money.
No, he does. I mean, he gets paid well enough. But anyway, so he sort of gave all of these really wonderful things about libraries. For example, he said that libraries are future. To close them would be a terrible, terrible mistake. It would be stealing from the future to pay for today, which is what got us in this mess in the first place, which is exactly true, you know. Mm-hmm. The housing market is basically founded on that principle. Yeah. And he said other things like, in this... austerity world, it's incredibly easy if you're a local authority and you're looking for cuts to say, let's just cut libraries, but that's borrowing from the future. And then even going on to talk about sort of the value of libraries, he's saying, you know, that children want stories, they want information, they want knowledge about the strange world they're in. Saying that the internet can be that is like setting a child free in a jungle and expecting them safely to find things to eat. And he goes on to talk about why libraries help sort of children find those stories that they're looking for. So he really gives this really sort of glowing endorsement for why we need to keep libraries funded, why they're important, and so on. And so today we're going to talk about why we think libraries are important.
Well, from the obvious, I am a mother. I've got two darling daughters.
Well, I mean, they're daughters. I don't know about darling. They're
girls. Yeah. Utterly debatable. Last year, my children read combined 3 million words, which is, I don't know how many pages that is, but it's a lot of freaking pages, and it was a lot of books. They read probably 60, 70 books between the two of them, if not more. They're on a program called Accelerated Reader that tracks how much they read, which is the only reason I know exactly how much. They get all of those books at the library. I can't afford to feed my children's voracious appetite for books. I can't afford to feed myself in terms of books. I can afford to feed myself food, but not in books. You know, I used to go out to a library, a bookstore, and spend $100 in one sitting, and then I realized that I couldn't afford that.
Well, and you have two kids. Well,
and
three,
I have two
if you
kids.
Count your husband.
Well, exactly. So the four of us trying to read as much as we read, it's absolutely impossible to do on any sort of middle American budget. Anyway. Their reading literally would not be possible without a local library. Not only their reading, but so many other opportunities are offered by libraries. They're doing a summer reading program this year. They just learned about doves yesterday, randomly. They're going to be learning about gardening, growing their own garden next week, all these different things. They were in a chess club that was supported by the local library. And it would be absolutely tragic if these extra things, even if were cut themselves, but budgets have gotten so tight that they're having trouble getting new books, they're having trouble keeping staff, they're having trouble keeping entire branches open, which is sad. I mean, it's absolutely the worst thing in the world to me. I mean, to me, it's absolutely heartbreaking. I grew up in the library. You know, I would sit for hours in libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish, I mean, it's the same thing with education. You wonder why they don't put more money towards it. And then you look at California and you go, wow, they're already putting tons of money towards it. They just suck. But libraries, two things are happening with libraries. Not only are they slashing budgets, but everybody is turning towards the library more and more.
Right, right. Something like 30% of Americans use libraries to do job searches and other things that they can't do at home because they just don't have internet or they can't afford it. So.
Exactly. And more than that, I mean, there are people like me who are reading newspapers, magazines. They're doing their internet stuff. They're getting their books. Low-income children, where are they going to be getting their books aside from school?
Well, if they're getting books at all, they're probably
getting books at all. Exactly. And the thing with schools are cutting libraries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are schools all across America that have shut down their school libraries entirely.
Yeah.
So, which is mind boggling to me. Like
utterly. I don't even know how they can call themselves a school without one, personally.
Yeah. Because it doesn't quite make any sense. Like, you're an educational institution. Having books is kind of important. But
incredibly important. Literacy leads to ability to do practically everything else in school.
Right, right. And not just literacy, but being good readers, being critical readers, being strong readers, that is far more valuable than just being able to read. Like, anybody can learn to read a sentence, but to be able to comprehend sentences, to be able to read books and understand what's going on a larger level, that's valuable in day-to-day life.
Incredibly valuable.
Yeah, critical thinking skills are dying in this country,
tragically.
And that is a lot of what jobs want. They don't just want robots. You know,
no, I think my husband makes as much money as he does because that's what he's good at. He's not that smart. No. My husband is really good at board games.
Oh no, he's smart. Oh no, yeah.
He is smart.
He's good at that.
Part of what he's good at, part of what makes him better than other people who theoretically know more than he does, is because of his incredible critical analyzation skills. He is a more creative thinker. And
he learned all that from you, clearly.
Obviously. No, and what's interesting is he was not a big reader when he was a child. Not compared to me, but not, granted, nobody was as big of a reader as I was. Most people weren't, anyway. He, however, totally relied on libraries. Single mother, low income. The only place that he had to go to get books was his local library. And that's where he was introduced to things like, you know, The Lord of the Rings. The librarian said, here, read this. You know, and where will we be without librarians who look at kids and go, you know, I think you might like this book, and hand it to them and send them on their way. And thereby establish an absolute love of reading. Because they find that one thing that's going to interest that one kid. And unless you have good librarians and strong library programs, you're not going to be able to help develop that in children.
Yeah.
And adults. I mean, adults need libraries just as much as anybody else. I desperately need my library, if not just for the hour a week that we spend there. or more, depending.
Yeah.
But everything that I read now comes from a library because I've had to cut back. And tons of people across America are doing the same thing.
Well, because they have to. Either they've lost their jobs, they don't have the job. You know, there were millions and millions of jobs, and we've only got some of those back. It was, what, like 39 million people were unemployed or something?
I don't even know what the numbers are anymore. It's too depressing.
It was bad. It's gotten slightly better, but not enough. It's still, the unemployment's still riding around at 10%, somewhere in there. Some places far worse than others. A lot of people just now suddenly don't have disposable income, either because they lost their job or maybe they got booted out of their house and some terrible bank company took all their money. You know, just all of these terrible things that have happened. So, and then it's just so just disturbing because we want the economy to recover, but then we're going to cut away from all of these programs that are offering people public services that they need. I mean, in this day and age, you can't, it's almost impossible to find really good jobs without having access to the services the libraries provide.
It's impossible.
You know, you
unless you do it on, unless you can somehow manage to miraculously do it by word of mouth, you desperately need the internet. And right. A lot of people, their only access is through the library. Tons and tons of Americans absolutely rely on it.
More so now than in years past.
Yes.
Because of the economy. Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, it's like I'm looking at a statistic right now. Chicago, who has had their budgets cut drastically, their hours slashed from 65 to 48, and budget slashed 30%. Their actual readership, or, you know, customers, patrons, is up 30%. Last year was up 30%. The year before that, it was up 30%. And this was in a country that, you know, people wander around going, "We Americans don't even read books." I mean, you hear statistics constantly about how nobody's reading anymore and whatnot. But they're going to the library for something. Chances are it's probably internet access and newspapers and magazines, local information, research. But they're still reading. And I think it would absolutely be criminal to get it to levels where it can't survive. And I'm terrified of that. I'm especially in schools. I spend every year examining the budgets, because the second the library goes is the second I absolutely foresee the downfall of American society. A slightly exaggeration, but not by much.
No, I could see that. I mean, I don't know if it would be the downfall, but I think
it'll be the downfall. I keep saying I'm slightly passionate about the subject, obviously. I think America will not be able to compete unless we can educate, validly educate our kids. Not necessarily to, you know, be producers of goods, but to be producers of ideas.
Yeah.
We are not doing that right now.
Well, we're not doing it as much. We have some producers, but we're lagging behind other nations that are developing quickly, like China.
It's not so much we're lagging behind. It's that we're lagging behind in producing new ones. Our numbers are still above theirs, but they're catching up really, really quickly. They will surpass us soon, and our numbers are slowly dwindling. So they're just going to be gone. You know, they'll be way out ahead of us, and America will be crushed the little bug we are.
I think the death of the if the libraries, whether they're school libraries or public libraries or all of the libraries, I think if they die, what we'll end up with isn't so much that we get no innovation, but that the innovation becomes incredibly classist, even more so than it already is. Because access to books, while books are cheap, for the most part, I mean, a $7.99 paperback is fairly cheap. You can go to the used bookstore and get books. But most families who are poor either don't prioritize it, or they don't have enough disposable income to have enough books in their houses for their kids. Or even sometimes they're not well educated themselves, and so libraries offer more services in that sense, helping kids become. And so what we'll end up with this whole generation of children who don't grow up with access to books, to computers, to all of the services that libraries provide. And what you end up with is you'll have all of these rich kids, which, not that there's anything wrong with being rich, but these kids will have all of the advantages that poor people will not have. And we'll see that gap increase even more than it already is. And it's already ridiculous right now.
It is. Exactly.
You know, you look at places like Japan. They just did a survey of the wages in Japan for the gaming people, like the heads of the gaming companies there. And this is Japan. This is, you know, the country that brings us the PlayStation and Nintendo, some of the largest companies ever, you know, in terms of gaming. And the amount of money that they bring in, you know, as CEOs and main head designers and stuff. I mean, if you looked in America and you compared, it would almost be pathetic how much they make. Because, like, some of them, like, the highest I think was like $1.4 million a year. For a CEO of a massive company. Yeah.
That's amazing.
You know, and that's not a very much money. It's a lot of money, but it's not. And especially in Japan, because these are people living in major cities.
Right.
Where, like, Tokyo is one of the most expensive cities to live in ever.
Is their wage gap smaller than in the United States? I don't know anything about it.
I don't know enough about the wage gap, but I also don't know enough about their social programs, whether or not they take care of their people in a way that we don't. But there's something in the way the culture works there. Because, I mean, it's not a poor country. It's a
fairly
rich
not.
Country. Like, the U.S. is, generally speaking, very rich. It's just the division in the U.S. is absurd.
It is absurd.
People making the kinds of money that just, regardless of whether you're Republican, Democrat, or whatever your opinions are about it, but they're making the kinds of money that is so mind-boggling absurd. And then you look and you think about all the people that have nothing, not because they are lazy or bums or crack addicts or whatever, but because they've had that stuff taken away from them.
Right. You know? And the more social programs we cut, I mean, the more the gap library is a social program.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Period. And so, yeah, no, it amazes me constantly. My husband and I discuss it fairly frequently because theoretically we're in the top 2% of Americans.
Not for your area, though.
Not for our area, granted, but no. 2% for America, period. Which, you know, is, yeah, we're doing great. Granted, we live in California. We live in the coast of California, so...
Yeah, you used to live in Santa Cruz, and...
Yeah, exactly.
Santa Cruz, two kids.
Right. Thank you for making me feel better.
I'm just making a point, like, you know,
but the
gap
between even in that 2%, the gap between the point that I'm at and what actual rich people make is still gigantic.
Yeah, because you guys
absolutely
don't make
gigantic. And the gap between me and people, my family, I mean, because we're lucky, you know, we really are, because I don't have to work and my husband makes a good enough living. But the gap between even me and a family right next door is fairly sizable. And I'm using the library, you know,
yeah.
I'm using the library. I'm in the top 2% of Americans and I need to use the library because my kids need access to those resources. They will always need access to those resources. The internet is great for so many things, but for learning how to research, you know, and actually finding pertinent information is not something you do on the internet. I've always found that parsing the information on the internet is much more difficult if you do not have the ability to have done it in a book in the first place, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there is so much on the internet, so much, and it's hard to even tell what's real and what isn't. So unless you've sat down with books and gone through them and figured out what is important and what is not, I think you would be less able to even navigate the waters of the internet. So there's something that they're going to need when they're older. But just, you know, in that whole creative thinking thing, books, yeah. That's what books give us. I mean, yes, children have an amazing imagination. But at some point in time, for most people, that kind of tapers off.
Mm-hmm.
And we're left with, you know, the boob tube and getting our imagination fed to us. And books allow us to continue feeding that drive. And I don't want my kids to starve.
Mentally starve.
Mentally starve. Yeah. I think,
well, you don't want them to regularly starve either, but...
No, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Actually, their bodies can starve as long as their minds are active.
Yeah.
I'm totally kidding.
Well, I think the interesting thing here is, like, for example, I use the university library, which I don't think is the same as using, like, a public library, just because the university library is, generally speaking, specialized material.
Right.
And so I have to go there for research material that I just can't afford to buy myself.
Oh, God, no.
And academic books, depending what kind of press it is, they can be anywhere from $75 to $300 for an academic
book.
Depends on the book. I mean, some of them are cheaper, like $20, but still, you know, if I just want a book for one article, like, I just can't afford to buy every damn book for one article. That's just too much money.
Absolutely.
So, but I consider that a little bit different than a public library, because a public library is, they may carry some of those same books, but they're not an academic institution. Like, the purpose isn't to provide necessarily an academic bit. Like, I don't know how to better describe that, but I'm hoping that makes sense. Does that make sense?
No.
I mean, they're a place where you can still learn, but, like, the purpose of a college library,
right,
is specifically to provide material for research.
Information for research,
right.
Yeah.
Right. They're very specific research materials, whereas a public library is, like, kind of a catch-all. Like, It's providing all sorts of stuff from all over the place, at least of what they can get and afford to buy.
Right. Well, you know, and each librarian makes a choice over, you know, what they need and what is valuable to their community.
Right.
And, which is, I have absolutely utmost respect for librarians.
Every librarian I've known is really mean, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. I've only known nice librarians.
But the librarians in where I grew up were really mean old ladies.
Oh, that's sad.
So they were kind of like, you know, like the 80s and 90s always had like the evil librarian.
Yeah, I know. And it's such a bad image.
It is, because most of them aren't like that, but most
of
them... No,
they're wonderful, passionate people.
Yeah, these weren't. These were just crotchety old ladies.
Well, yeah, it's just kind of...
And they were really mean, you know.
I'm sorry. It's good that they didn't scare you away from the library, though.
Well, I don't use the public library anymore, but I support
the public. Because you're spoiled.
Well, I'm the kind of person I like to highlight and mark, and I don't like to highlight, but I do it because now I'm academic, so I gotta highlight.
Well, academically, right. Yeah. What we've started doing, actually, is I go to the library for almost everything. If I can't find something at the library that I desperately want, I will buy it, and then I donate it to the library. Because I really don't need books. I just don't have the space. I want to keep books. I want to. I really want to.
You can store them at my house.
No. Forget it.
You'll never get them back. Ever.
Eventually we want one of those like big library thingies with like the rolling ladder.
Yes. Oh,
but,
I want that.
And we have a wall for that, which would be awesome. But I really love going to libraries, to be honest. I mean, they are one of my favorite places in the world. I love listening to people. I love seeing what type of people are checking out what types of books. I'm very curious at the library. And
ex-convicts.
Probably. Lots of
At least in Placerville, because the library is just across the highway from the jail.
Well, it's good that the ex-convicts are reading. That makes me happy
for
the world.
And on that same note, I actually watched, it was like a little video about this prison library system. I can't remember what it was, but it had the guy that tried to blackmail Dave Letterman, and he part of his work detail. He's like in prison for like 7 months or something, and he has to his work detail is he works in this library thing, and they bring out these like tables, and they set up some books, and the prisoners can borrow a book or two and read them, you know. And so, you know, they bring in all these books for these guys, and I'm assuming it's not a maximum security prison. Most of these guys are probably in for fairly smaller crimes. Not that that's okay. It's bad.
Even at maximum security prisons, they do have library programs.
Okay. It was really interesting, though, because, like, you know, you get these guys of various ages, and you're looking at, like, these guys are now reading, you know? Like,
I know, and some of them are reading for the first times in their lives.
Yeah, and they were talking about how, like, the things that get checked out all the time that they have to always get more copies of are, like, dictionaries, because, like, when they're going up for appeals, like, they're written in a way most of them, you know, they
don't understand.
They don't understand half the words, so they have to look them up.
Right.
And I was just like, that's really neat, because, like, here are guys that, you know, they're not murderers and stuff.
But still, they're hardened criminals. And so, therefore, the impression of them is they don't need books.
I don't know if they would be considered hardened criminals.
Well, they're criminals.
Well, they're criminals. I mean, they committed crimes that were felonies. But, you know, they didn't, like, murder people. They didn't commit domestic, like, try to murder or whatever. These are guys like that, you know, like he smoked pot or he dealt drugs, which is not good, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
It's a crime against poverty.
They're like lower level crimes.
Right.
So, I mean,
but still.
Yeah. They're still criminals, but it was just interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Anyway.
It even has value in that sense. Like, you know, if this book program in the prison system, if this helps some of those guys maybe stay out of trouble, both in the prison and outside of it. Maybe it teaches them some skills. They learn things about the world or whatever. Or, you know, it prevents them from going back to prison. That, I think that's
incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
Libraries, probably if they had gone as children, they might never have gotten to jail in the first place.
Right. They just die with their nose in a book instead.
They might have stolen books, but...
Which I've read a book about a guy who did just that. He stole something like $500,000 worth of rare books before he was caught and put in prison.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a book called The Man Who Loved Books Too Much. I forget the
author. I want to
It's really that. Brilliant. Just learning the story of this guy and like the books he stole and the like first editions of books and how much they're worth and how much they sell for among book collectors and just the sort of book collector culture. It's a really fascinating book.
That was my favorite part of Inkheart.
I haven't finished that. I read like the first 15 pages and then I just got bored.
The aunt or whoever she is a book collector. And that was literally my favorite part of the entire thing. And the fact that the father was, you know, a bookbinder and all that. I think that fascinated me more than anything else in the series. I was like, I want to be them. I want her house. I want her book collection. I want to bind books.
That but actually anyway. Reminds me of a comic that I saw, and I'll try to find it again. It's on my StumbleUpon account, but it reminds me of this comic where it's this older guy who's going to this bookshop, this big, enormous bookshop, and he wants to find that one book from when he was a kid, right? You know, that one book that he remembers from his childhood that's just so fond in his memory, but he can never find it. And he goes to this bookshop, and this bookshop has every book ever except one.
It's
this whole, well, maybe, I'm not going to ruin it. It might be, but it's this whole kind of like this story of like, you know.
That sounds like my life.
It's really cute. It's like, I don't know, maybe 10 pages little comic, and it's got good art, and it's a very cute little story. But, you know, yeah, I'll find it, and I'll definitely link to it, and everybody will have it. So,
all right. Shall we move on to the end of our show?
Yeah, I think we should come back after a little bit more music and finish out the show. The whole point of this, libraries are awesome. We need to support libraries. I'm going to go and preach to you all, but... You probably all know because you like books anyway.
Yes, very much so.
Even if you don't use the libraries, just realize that just because you don't use it doesn't mean it doesn't have value in society.
Even Glenn Beck likes the library. Granted, he doesn't realize that it's a social program, but even Glenn Beck uses the library.
I went to the library, that evil socialist place.
I'm sorry, I just had to mention that. Yes, people use the library. People use the library more and more every day, and slashing their budgets it's not where you need to slash budgets, basically.
Right. It's just not a good idea, and quite honestly, you're doing more damage to the country
exactly
by not supporting libraries than you are doing good. You're doing good for yourself, but that may not last if our country...
It's a short-term fix. And long term, you're going to be hurting your bottom line way more than if you kept it.
Especially now, with so many other nations now pushing their economies. Like, you know, China is, if they haven't surpassed us already, are only moments away from literally overtaking us economically. And quite honestly, we need a country that's stronger. We're not strong enough. We need to be better. We need to be more innovative. We need to be in a country where it's not okay to be like, I'm not going to buy an American car because that Japanese one's better. Like,
we've been in that country
for a while, but it's like, there's a reason why our American auto companies were falling apart, because the Japanese cars were just better cars.
Well, Americans don't support innovation. And you can find it at your local library. The end.
All right, so we're going to come back after preaching to you guys about libraries. We're gonna come back from music. We're gonna finish out our show. The show's ending up a lot longer than I thought it would be, but it seems like we had a lot of interesting stuff to say, and we had, of course, whales with laser beams in their eyes, so it was
It's very distracting.
So we're gonna come right back, guys. And And we're back with our reading and writing section. Since Adam's not here, again, since Jen doesn't know how to write.
I know how to write. God, with the dissing.
Yeah, I can't help it. I'm sorry.
Shut up. All I wrote was a letter. But letters are important, too. And they are an exercise and can be an exercise in creative writing.
Sure, we can go with that. Yeah.
Write me.
Yeah, I'm not writing anything but the same stuff I was writing before, so we shouldn't even talk about that. So we'll talk about what we're reading. I just finished a book called Bake a Lamb by Z. Edgel, which is
What?
It's called Bake a Lamb.
Bake a Lamb?
No, Bake a. Like,
oh, thank God.
It's her name, Bake a Lamb.
Sorry.
Bake a Lamb.
Continue.
By Z. Edgel. It was an interesting little book, and...
I'm sorry! I bet it was!
It had nothing to do with lambs or baking.
Yeah, but that would make for a funny book, I think. I'm sorry.
Bake a lamb.
It's late.
It's 2 o'clock for me. I don't want to hear it.
Shut up. Okay. Anyway, what was it about?
It's like a literary book, so it's really hard to describe because it doesn't have a plot.
Oh.
But it's basically follows this young girl who lives in the country of Belize, and it's sort of about her life. And she's at like the age of like 14, so mm-hmm. she's kind of like at that cusp of like she's getting into adulthood, and it's kind of like about her trying to find her place within this post-colonial nation. Well, this nation that hasn't quite gained independence yet. Her friend who gets pregnant and ostracized by the community, her family, and
it's relating her coming of age experience to the country.
Yeah, some of it is. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things like interesting stuff to do with racism and and traditionalism, like the traditional culture versus modernity. So you get that sort of like quote unquote progress versus the traditional, and that shows up a lot of the like where you get characters who are like. Argue and bicker over whether or not the old ways are even worth remembering. Like, you get these arguments.
Oh.
So there's interesting stuff going on in it, but it's really hard to describe without making it sound like it's just some literary academic book.
That's I think it sounds interesting anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, I enjoyed the parts that I read. I'm not 100% finished with it. I got like 10 pages left, but whatever. I'm not reviewing it, so. But yeah, it's good. And other than that, I'm reading Tobias Bakel's work. And I've narrowed down my reading list for this paper that I'm trying to finish writing. So I'm going to finish Perdido Street Station this weekend. So.
Yeah, and I'm going to continue reading it. I've only gotten about 10 pages in. I know I said I would be further than you the first day I picked it up, but
I read 20 pages in it, so suck on that.
Like I said, I mean, I read the introduction, the preface, and I think the first chapter. And I'm realizing that I'm not sure I actually like New Weird. So I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the book, but I'm a little bit scared, worried, concerned over my own reception of the novel.
Keep reading it.
I will. I mean, I've been excited about reading China Mabel for ages, so, you know, dropping it would be ridiculous. And it's not to the point where I'm reading it and going, oh my god, this is awful, why am I reading this? Obviously. I'm just cautious. And I've been doing a lot of cross-stitch this week, so I haven't had a lot of time. But.
The plot element that opens up in the next 20 or 30 pages, you'll like that a lot.
Okay. Well, I hope I do. Because the last book I read was, I finished Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Woo!
And I think it'll be my favorite book of the year. I think it was released last year, but it was fantastic.
That's and good. It's good.
Definitely need to read it. And my husband loved it, which doesn't happen very often. So
you must have read it pretty quick because you didn't finish that till fairly recently.
I finished it days ago.
Yeah, so he must have read it in the last...
Oh, yeah, he read it in like 2 days. He's about as fast as I am.
Fast reader people, you.
I know, I'm sorry.
Make me feel very bad about myself. I wish I could read fast, like the speed reader people.
Anyway, that's what we're reading and writing.
By the way, I finally got... You know the that comment that I left on Mark Karen Newton's blog?
No.
That I won the book for?
Oh, right.
The kind of weird one where I had a literary disease.
Yes.
Which is really fun. I finally got the book from him with the inscription with the amoeba and it's an amoeba with a sword and a Viking hat.
That's hilarious.
It's really fantastic. I'm very happy about it, yeah. Anyway, so why don't you tell them our question of the week?
I just forgot it. Oh, that's what our question is. Since we talked about libraries and how important they were to us, or at least how important they are to me, Duke, less so.
No, they're very important to me. I just don't
personally use them. From a research standpoint, you just don't use them, right? We decided to ask, what is your fondest memory of the library? Was there any particular experience that just rings with you, that stays with you, has stayed with you over the years? Is there anything about the library that just makes you all squishy inside? Leave us a comment, call us, let us know, and we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, my favorite memory is stuffing a bag full of dinosaur books. I think that's the one memory that sticks out for libraries when I was a kid, just stuffing a bag full of library books, or full of dinosaur books.
I just remember exploring the UCSC library when I was like 6 years old, and the stacks and stacks, and playing tag, and poring over books that I couldn't even really read at the point in time in which I was doing it. I loved that, and I still love that.
It's a great library.
It is.
Yeah. Have they finished the work on it yet?
No clue.
Okay, because I remember they were working on that before I graduated.
They were. So. It was looking pretty beautiful, but I'm not sure if they're done yet. Yeah. It really is a fantastic library, and that spiral staircase, I still love it. I don't know why.
Oh, the really weird one that goes between the floors. It's like, that's...
But yeah, my dad went to UCSC, so I got to hang out at the library when he was doing his research. So
cool. Well, if you want to answer our question, you can email us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can send us a voicemail, which has changed because the last one, something went wrong with it. So our new voicemail is 206-203-1686. Hopefully that you can remember that. That sounds easy. You can leave a comment on our WordPress blog, which is skiffyandfanty@wordpress.com. Or follow us on Twitter and send us an at message. If you're on Twitter, I'm assuming you know how to do that. So it's twitter.com/skiffyandfanty. So send us your favorite moment, your fondest memory of the library. And we'd love to hear from you. So,
indeed. And maybe I'll be back next week.
Well, no, because we're not here next week.
Well, whatever.
But maybe the week after, because maybe there's, who knows? We'll see. If not, we have special things to announce for when I come back.
I'm excited about those special things.
I know, so am I. I'm always excited about special things.
Yeah. Sounds so dirty. Good night, folks.
Yeah, good night.